Network. He was one of the top first executives, MTV and VH1. He's been involved also in on the boards of XM Satellite Radio and of ComScore, which, as you know, helps to measure digital traffic. So a guy who's thought a lot about broadcasting, about entertainment, and about traffic and how audiences respond. One of the first things I said up to him was, you know, what do you bring from those endeavors? And he said, well, one of the things I really understand are the expectations of audiences and the importance of living up to your mission. NPR is a very different mission than ETV. We're not doing reality radio, if you will. You know, I'm not going to change what NPR is good at and what people expect of it, but I am going to try to deliver even better on that promise.
And how is he being received so far by NPR's member stations? There's long been this conflict about how NPR can move forward, especially with digital stuff, when the bread and butter does come from all of the member stations.
Well, that's right. A significant portion of NPR's revenues comes from fees for the programs, primarily Morning Edition, all things considered, but some others as well, that the member stations pay. And as a result, member stations are both clients and insofar as member station executives hold 10 of the 17 seats on the governing board of directors, they are also the bosses of NPR. And it means that we're really a system rather than a top-down network. And that has its strengths, but it also has a lot of sort of multifaceted arguments and debates about things. One thing that I can say about Mona is, as well as being a benefactor of a number of cultural institutions throughout Southern California where he lives, he's also been a board member of KPCC, that's Southern California Public Radio. It's one of our largest, most influential member stations. And he's, for the last 2 years, been the chairman of the board there. And he's really tried to help them cultivate it and reinforce their intention of serving as a civil space for news and information, exchange of ideas, even so far as going to help them come up with one of their recent marketing slogans that he thinks helps reinforce not just their brand, but their mission. And that brand is No Rant, No Slant,
right?
A slogan he thought of going down the escalator while he's going to pick up his bags at the airport.
I've seen those billboards around Los Angeles, David. But let me ask you, just in the minute we have left, do you think he'll last? Because every CEO seems to get snapped up by somebody else and leave within a short period of time.
Well, he's committed to a 5-year contract. I asked him that very question not minutes ago. And his answer is, look, I don't need a job. I mean, he's a very wealthy man. He doesn't need to do anything right now. And he's taking this job because he says he believes in this. He thinks that there's opportunity to help wildly increase NPR's revenues and to share those revenues with the member stations in a way that inspires greater collaboration rather than greater tensions.
NPR media correspondent David Folkenflik on the news today that NPR has appointed a new president and CEO. It is Jarl Mohn. He will start on July 1st. David, thanks so much.
You bet.
So Amanda Beelen didn't get the job.
I guess she did not. She's our intern.
And Amanda's our intern. She's graduating from Emerson Sunday with a master's. So Jarl Mohn, look out.
Maybe he can give her a job now, or at least starting July 1st. Amanda, we wish you the best of luck. This is Here and Now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Dave Dickey with our special look at today's USDA release of its May WASD report. Here's how some of the key numbers shook out this morning. For U.S. ending stocks for 2013-14 in billions of bushels, corn 1.146, soybeans 130 million, and wheat came in at 583 million bushels. And then our first look at ending stocks for 2014 and 15. USDA projects corn ending stocks at 1.726 billion bushels, soybeans at 330 million, and wheat at 540 million bushels. Here's how the numbers are shaking out in the current trade. Hardwood winter May wheat is 824, down 8.5. July, 836.25, down 6.25. Soft July wheat, 728.5, down 6.75. July corn, 509, down 7.5. December, 499.5, down 12. July soybeans, 14.84 and a half up 15, and November at 12.25 and a quarter up 1 1/4. Joining us on the phone to talk about the markets is Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics, and he is in Atchison, Kansas. Good afternoon, Mike.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Like I said this morning, when we talked about right off the get-go, there was a real push to try to take some of that pent-up selling bearish action and push the market down, but beans have come back.
Yeah, they really have, and they've really got the best report of all, in my opinion, when you look at the here and now, because USDA, what they essentially did was the same thing they've done the past 3 months. They're saying, yes, the stocks are tightening, but we're going to see more imports, and we're going to see a reduction in the crush side of the equation. But the trade, I think, at this point, Dave, is just not buying it, and I doubt if they will continue to buy it. And I especially say that because we're so early in the new crop planting year, it's going to be tough for the USDA's report to go from 130 million old crop beans to 330 new crop for the trade not to at least rectify what's going on with the old crop demand first. And so essentially, I think you're going to see the trade continue with the bull spreading for the most part, and you're going to see them say to themselves, look, we want to see the white of the eyes of the imports. We want to see the actual imports coming in. We want to see the Gulf price go down, and then and only then will we really start to take the extra premium and the inversion out of the old crop beans at this point. And yes, world global soybean ending stocks are looking at a record right now after today's report, and it's going to be an increase of 23% versus the 13-14 world bean ending stocks. But I'm not so sure the trade will really concentrate on that until we get maybe 15, 30, 45 days down the road and we get the July beans as the lead month and we get some weather and some planting behind us.
I fill out these tables on our internet at 11 o'clock looking at the actual WASDE report numbers. And when I first put in the jump in corn world-ending stocks to 168.42, I had to go back and look at that number again. I wasn't sure I was right.
Yeah, and when you look at the coarse grain-ending stocks and incorporate some of the other feed utilizers like the rye and the barley, you're talking about coarse grain-ending stocks for 14-15 at over 210 million tons. That's the biggest since 1998. That's going to be the fourth biggest since 1975, if realized. And this is the big thing for the analyst out there, I think, Dave, is the USDA is suggesting to the market that the crop being grown now will alleviate very tight U.S. stocks, whether you're talking about wheat, whether you're talking about corn, or whether you're talking about beans. And this is where I think the USDA is almost the exact opposite or the exact mirror image of where it was last year. And the question now for the analyst is, will the trade bite on that? Will they bite into that apple with the idea that, don't worry, there's more supplies coming? And I think after last year and the push down in prices and the reaction in demand, and look at today's demand again in the corn exports, jumping from 1.75 billion to 1.9 billion in 1 month, mind you,
right,
that we're talking about, I think, a trade that's a little bit more sly and a little bit more suspicious, I should say, of maybe what the USDA is trying to project at this point. Doesn't mean you don't hedge, but I think you've got to be very careful about what's going on geopolitically. And you really, I think, and at least as far as what I'm doing here in the analysis at Global Commodity Analytics, is let's really work the technicals. Let's really watch the technicals and obey the technicals and put them at the top of the list for the analytical side of the equation, simply because they're, at least at this point, more reliable than what the government numbers probably are right now.
So let's lay out those technical benchmarks for people to keep an eye on.
Yeah, and this is where we go back to the trade from earlier this morning and what we talked about earlier this morning. That 498 level in December corn is huge. We went down to 497 and a quarter after the report came out. Close below 498 takes you below the 40-day moving average. The soybeans for the November, you're talking about the 1210 level, 1208 level. Guess what today's low now is? 1210 and a half after the report. So I think these 40-day moving averages, along with that Dow Jones UBS grain index support line and moving average, really do dictate how hard you press the sale button. And I put another 10% recommendation out after the report to clients on 2014. Did 10% more on cash beans and an HTA, did 10% more on the paper corn. Why paper corn? Why keep it in the paper side? Simply because the updated noontime models are now pushing very heavy rains out of Missouri up into Iowa and the very northern tip of Illinois. And so 3 to 4 inch rains, I think, would be friendly to the price coming back Sunday night.
I wanted to talk about coming back Sunday night. If we come back, let's say for the moment we actually close under those 40-day moving averages that you have laid out, and we come back and press the downside on Sunday night, what does that imply for the balance of next week? Does it set a tone for next week?
I think it does, because you've also got a dollar that's up about 2/3 of a percent, and I think this is where the technicals come back into play and the seasonals come back into play. You just don't fight City Hall at this point. The government numbers are out. If the charts say sell, I think that's where you allow the May seasonal to come in. And like we talked about this morning, we never really had a strong pullback in either the corn or the beans or the wheat in the month of April. We've been running counter-seasonal. Don't fight that. Let the market go ahead and take another week or 15 days or 20 days to find its bottom, to find its demand again. I think there's enough in this report that if the wheat market and the bean market wants to join forces and keep the technicals in a supportive bullish mindset, they can do that on today's close.
So if we set back for the next 7 to 14 days, it might be a consolidation phase that will give us another opportunity for an assault on the contract highs.
Well, not only that, but I think it also opens the door up that you've priced in the biggest yield number that you're probably going to get. I mean, USDA came out with 165 plus today.
Right.
And that's a big number, and that's a lot to go after. Yes, it's a more limited number of planted acres, so your average yield will statistically be better, but I think that's a big number that we're going to digest here, and so you have less, I think, bearish shocks to propel you. And when we go back to the wheat as our fundamental and seasonal leader again, if the wheat, hard red wheat market saw the production number right within the trade guesses, right around 740, 750 million bushels, I think it's lower than that, Dave, because that number is as of May 1. So this is where, as we get into the later part of May, if we've done a nice seasonal correction in corn, that I think is going to be a great opportunity for the feeders to get some risk management done and get some long hedges in place so they're not battling the potential for higher feed grain prices at the same time lower meat prices.
How much more bullishness can the wheat trader expect beyond this report then?
If you look at the 2010-2011 scenario, you can't rule out the idea that the hard red wheat July futures can get close to that $9 handle, because if the crop is below 700 million bushels, and this goes back to the USDA report and finding enough to trade to be still be bullish. The USDA came out with a bigger global ending stocks number next year than they did this year. I find that extremely hard to envision given what's going on in the Ukraine and given what's going on with our hard red and our spring wheat crop. So if you get that type of mindset reestablished in the trade, the technicals and the fundamentals would say to me hard red wheat could probably get up close to $9 in the July contract.
Thank you, Mike.
Thanks, Dave.
Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics, and he is in Atchison, Kansas. December corn is trading at $5.25, down 11 and a quarter. November soybeans are trading at $12.27, and they are up 3. And that is our special coverage of the WASDE report. This is Dave Dickey.
So the kids can practice their English.
I live with my old brother. He has 23 years.
Do you know, instead of saying he has 23 years, you could say he is 23 years old.
But the Speaking Exchange Program video has gone viral because the kids and the seniors are becoming friends.
This is your dad?
That's me and my wife when we were young.
Oh, you were good looking when you were young. And you're still good looking.
If you could just dream and have whatever you want, what do you think you would like to be doing?
I see myself in big family, you know, with a beautiful wife. You know.
Well, speaking of connecting.
I want to do a Mother's Day episode.
Mother's Day, okay.
Yeah.
That's documentary filmmaker Joshua Seftel with his mother, 76-year-old Pat Seftel, using FaceTime in a recent edition of their mother-son YouTube series, My Mom on Movies, in which they talk about everything from style to Miley Cyrus's twerking. The videos have thousands of hits. Pat's getting recognized in the supermarket. Josh Seftel joins us from the studios of NPR New York. Welcome.
Thanks.
And Pat Seftel joins us by Skype from her home in